Hello, and welcome to From the Rookery End. We've been here before. We've been here before a lot. My name's John, and we're recording this on Sunday night, 24 hours or so after Watford lost at home 2-1 to Coventry City. And not quite, but just about 24 hours since we heard the news that Valerian Ismail has been sacked as Watford manager, and Tom Cleverley is coming in as interim or head coach. We're going to talk about that, surprisingly, because we like to talk about things on this podcast. I'm joined this evening by Mike.
John, all I can say is thank heaven for the Hemel Storm, because on Saturday, Watford lost a big game. Chesham United, who are currently top in their division, they played second place and lost their game. Wealdstone, who I enjoy going to see as well, they lost in the quarterfinals of the FA Trophy. Wembley was hoving into view for the Stones. They lost on penalties. So all the sort of teams I've got a passing interest in lost. And then along came Hemel Storm taking on the top of the table, Derby Trailblazers, and they won an absolute barn burner of a game. But what cost it came at, because I am sat here with, I'm no doctor or physician, but if I haven't badly bruised my coccyx or whatever it's called, I'm in absolute agony. So basically, Hemel were 1 point down with 1.2 seconds to go. So basically, they had one play to win the game, 1.2 seconds to do it. They decided on the play, they went for it, and they won. And it was just extraordinary. It was one of the most brilliant sporting experiences I've had. But I went to celebrate and put my foot where I thought there was a step to sort of push off to launch myself into the air to celebrate. There was nothing there, so my foot just hit thin air. I went A over T, landed flat on my back. I was like an upturned turtle. My jumper had ridden up my... Oh, it was the most undignified way of celebrating sporting triumph ever known. And it's pretty painful today. But great fun. Again, I'd say it. Get yourself down to the Storm Dome. If you fancy your basketball, it's really good fun. But thank heaven for them. Otherwise, it would have been a pretty dismal sporting day.
You say dismal. I think it's a Michael Parkin day of sportingness. It gives you opportunities, but we'll get to that in a minute. Jason, how are you?
I'm good. And Mike, if you want some sporting cheer, this is a bit of a boast, really. But as you know, I like my running. And yesterday, my 168th park run was actually my best age graded score park run ever. Mike, please don't start backing me, because you know, I fear it'll all go south. But it wasn't such a bad sporting day for me. I've got a little thing to cheer there.
If I could celebrate, Jace, I would, but I literally can't get out of my chair without it causing absolute agony. So
there is a photograph, and we will share that on our social medias. You can't really see Mike at all, but you can see you can tell the position he's in, and you can see his feet.
It is the best sporting photograph I've seen in a long time.
but you say I was at a quiz night last night. I was hosting it, and then just intense and all that, and just taking scores in, and then just as they leave, I look at my phone and. Oh, well, I'm not surprised. And in fact, we've sort of been waiting to do this podcast for a while. About 2 weeks ago, when we lost at home to Huddersfield, we were discussing exactly how we would deal with this moment that we now find ourselves in, with yet another head coach being sacked by Gino Pozzo. I'm going to say that, not by the club, I'm going to say by Gino Pozzo. Mike, let's get out of the way. Let's get, if coccyx is in a bad place, let's get your head in a better place. Seeing the news, where are you? How are you feeling?
I, like pretty much everyone listening, John, I'm pretty sure I wasn't surprised. And like you say, we have been waiting to say that game was the one that broke the straw that broke the camel's back for a couple of weeks now. We've seen abject performances at Huddersfield, Millwall, and now we've thrown it away against Coventry. It wasn't that much better against Swansea either. So no surprise. But also, I'd kind of insulated myself to the on-field performances because I'm sort of more worried about the bigger picture. So how do I feel about the sacking? Unsurprised, disappointed it's ended like that. But my overarching concern is, you mentioned him there, John, is with the owner. And we find ourselves in this position because of him, quite frankly. My concern is about the direction that this football club is travelling and probably has been for some time, really. If you look at what Valerian Ismail had to play with, it was a a diminished squad, really, wasn't it? It was. We probably had 11 decent enough players for a championship side, but we're lacking a striker, lacking any sort of depth. So he was dealt a bit of a dud hand, really. And this side is worse than the one before, from the season before, and worse than the one from the season before that. And that is because Gino Pozzo is evidently investing less money into the football club. It is, well, I was going to say one in, one out. It's not even that, is it? It's that the money going into the playing side is lower than it ever has been. There's money going out because I think I was at Millwall the when was that, last weekend. Gino Pozzo was sat there with everybody's favourite agent. You can bet your bottom dollar that he's had a few quid sloshing around from various transfers that Watford have made. The fact that he's still knocking around, I think, is a bit of a middle finger, effectively, to us as Watford supporters. It shows that he's not really bothered about what we think. People have spoken about that particular agent at length. There's stuff in the public domain. You don't need me to rehash it, but we know that as agents go, potentially, that might be one that you wouldn't want to be associated with. Yet here we are in a situation where money is an absolute premium, it would appear, for the playing side of things. And we're finding money for particular people, and we're not finding money for the team. And it is just diminishing investment and diminishing returns. And it feels like we're just at the start of, well, we're mid slippery slope. And my fear is that it's going to start picking up pace and things are going to get bad pretty quickly. I think people always ask me, are you Pozzo out, Mike? Are you Pozzo out? Do you want him gone? And look, I think there's a vanishingly few people at this stage who wouldn't welcome either new investment or a new owner. That I think if no one agrees with that, I'd be surprised. I think he's wanted out for a long time. But it's almost like shouting at him is like shouting at someone who's put their house on the market to sell your house. He wants out. He's trying to sell the club. You need a buyer that's going to come in with a certain amount of capital that's able to meet the losses and is able to pay back what Gino needs to get his money back. It's not easy to find those people. As we're finding out, there's just nothing visible or public happening in that regard. So how do I feel about the manager going? Tired, jaded, a little bit apathetic, to be perfectly honest, because we've known it's coming, but it is the inevitable result of how the football club is being run at the moment. And in all honesty, how the football club has probably always been run. I think it's starting to become clear that potentially Gino Pozzo didn't necessarily quite know what he was doing in terms of getting promoted and staying in the division. We ended up with some really, really good players, but it's starting to look more by luck than judgment. And I just worry about the financial stability of the club. I worry about the direction of travel. I'd made peace with what was happening on the pitch. If I was of the opinion that if we could stay up, that's fine. I can just need to get to summer and then potentially regroup and try and think about where the football club is going. But I'm long term massively, massively concerned. Short term, just exhausted, really.
Yeah, it is that. And I suppose, Jason, yesterday was the culmination of many things. I don't want to use the word better. I suppose I want to say not as bad as before. And over the last couple of weeks, the Huddersfield felt the lowest. And that's why we felt it was the time that he was going to go. And we started talking about doing this podcast. I think it's the longest prep we've ever done, maybe, for a podcast. Those are 2 weeks where we wait for this to happen. And you know, we've seen Swansea this week, and we've seen the Coventry visit Vicarage Road yesterday. And let's talk about Val and his exit, because what Mike said so far is not going anywhere, not yet. But in terms of that game, I turned to you early on. I said, you know, with this idea in our head that, you know, he's maybe fighting for his job. Do you think he's made those changes, Jason? Because he's trying something different. And you replied.
And I replied, and I remember what I replied, because I'm an old man these days. I think he was just filling the gaps that were there, weren't he? I don't think he'd made changes because he wanted to try something different. It was Semmer out because he's injured, Livermore out because he was poorly, and just sort of plugged those gaps, really. I didn't feel like there was anything different. I suppose Dennis through the middle instead of Bio, but yeah, I'm not sure what that achieves, really, or what it did achieve. And going back to your point where you said it wasn't as bad as before, I think we said within the group yesterday that obviously the team started kicking towards the rookery end.
Yeah.
Was that our choice? Did we win the toss and decide that we would do that because we've started games so slowly? Do we think that kicking towards the rookery end will mean a faster start? And I think it did to an extent. It took a few minutes to get going, but once we got going, we looked good. And when we scored, I think we deserved it. We would have
played
a team at that point. By the time they scored their penalty, I thought we were long in need of half time.
Yeah.
It was probably those last 10 minutes we were up against it. And it was almost like Coventry had sort of got a sort of foothold in it. They'd started to settle a bit themselves, and we kind of just sort of went all back into our shell.
Yeah.
Go on in, Coventry. Over to you.
And it was, I want to, you know, we'll talk about the second half in a bit, Mike, but I suppose I'm not talking about this saying, hi guys, can we find the positives in this yesterday?
Doing that. Just as well.
There are still 9 games going this season. So seeing what we saw, the positives, again, not really positives, the good things, the better things from that first half, I think for me was, and actually the one change he'd done which felt really worthwhile was Chatfatatse. You know, him coming on and him, after we saw he added against Swansea, he added that energy. And I suppose there's a little bit of, when you see it, you know, someone who likes to run and add a bit to it and be energetic, you think, well, are you going to start a game or could you last a whole game? You know, is it better you to come off the subs bench? All those sorts of thoughts. But he was purposeful. And I think he made Jamal Lewis better.
Yeah.
You know, those partnerships on the side can really be important. So very important, I think, to when it comes to success. The other one, who I believe did a great role in his third role of the season, was Tondele Bashiru, who, you know, playing in that anchor role, which I haven't seen him play before, but him and Kembe sort of can be back to where he had been. There were positives to come out of that first half.
The first half was certainly the first, or maybe the middle half hour of the first half, because I think Cov were on top initially. It took us a little while to find our feet, but it was much better. And I think let's deal with Tondele and Kiembe. Tondele Bashiru, who's shown himself to be an able teammate, I think, this season. I think that's the one thing you can say about him. He's played in different roles. And he's grown in stature. He looks big. He looks comfortable. He looks strong. I don't think he lets down at all, really, when he played at right back and in midfield. He can look big and dominating. And alongside Kiembe, they work quite well. You're right about Jamal Lewis in that first half. I think he looked significantly better than he has done in previous outings, when he's been far too meek and timid and just off the pace going forward, and sort of not strong enough in that left back role either defensively. But yeah, the man of the first half was Chatfatadze, and coming off the back of his struggle to say game changing cameo against Swansea, but he was the sort of blue touch paper that got things going as much as anyone did against Swansea. He's come in obviously full of confidence. Sensible call from Valerian Ismail, the former Watford head coach, to bring him on. And just the way he cut inside, and he was moving past players really, really comfortably. But you know what that was? It was just a desire to get forward. And we simply, and I was going to say, someone asked, do you feel, has Valerian Ismail been a little bit unlucky? And he was, to a degree, because Kov really surprised me, actually. Incredibly aggressive. Lots of sort of pretty agricultural challenges, and Madley sort of clamped down on a couple. But then Chatfatadze got absolutely clattered with, what, I don't know, 5-6 minutes to go to half-time. The ref didn't even give a free kick, let alone a yellow card. And that was ultimately to prove enough to see Chatfatadze coming off at half-time. And I thought, oh, that is just, how's your luck, Val? You are fighting for your job. We all knew he was, and it felt like that was a half, or at least two thirds of a half of football that might help him tick along. Because I felt personally, to be honest, I thought that Watford were going to try and stick with him. I thought Gino and Scott, whoever's pulling the strings, wanted him to see it through as we did. But so I felt if this was his last throw of the dice, for at times it was looking all right. But as soon as Chakwetadze went off in that second half, I said in our WhatsApp group, we cannot revert to type. And that's exactly what we did. And you always have to look at the opposition. Coventry, Dander's up, decent players. They brought on good substitutes. When O'Hare comes on, you know that you've got a decent depth of squad. But we just, as soon as they equalised, you knew. You knew. And that's, I think the players' confidence is absolutely through the floor. How much of that can be attributed to Valerian Ismail? Well, you have to say a fair bit, because of the way we were set up to play, the way they're obviously instructed to play. The fact that someone in the shape of Chakwetadze was coming on and a few jinky runs forward were going, oh, wow, this is great. That's what players should be doing, yeah, of the quality we've got. So, yeah, it was good performances from those guys in parts. But again, it was just, I said, this is just a slow amble towards inevitable defeat, and so it proved.
Jace?
Mike mentioned that he thought Gino might actually stick with him. I've been wondering if he was just going to wait for the international break, because that would be typical Pozzo standard manager change, to do it in an international break. Instead, if he's not rushed into it, because reports were coming out about this happening 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure. Cleverly coming in as interim manager, normally, again, with the typical Pozzo MO, they've got the next man lined up. Have the performances actually, if he's sitting there with his finger on the trigger, he's just got a bit too twitchy and twitched earlier than he thought he would do.
The only thing I thought about that timing was the fact that we've got Birmingham next week. And then if you look at the run of games that we've got into the end of the season, that is the last, really, club that we play that is below us in the league. So that might be the reason why the last throw of the dice was happening there. You're right, yeah. Jace. It's interesting that the appointment of Tom, we'll get to, you know, about him importantly, but you're right in terms of that, you know, the man he wanted. This is, apart from the very, very ends of the season, or for a couple of games in the middle between head coaches, it's the only time they have ever appointed someone till for not, say, 9-10 games as an interim. So they clearly don't know, or the person they want is going to be better available fairly, or in the summer.
Yeah, it's a difficult time for a head coach to take over. I think in terms of what Gino's done, he's just reverted to type. The fix it is, and we've defended him over the years. You know, I'll usually put a message out on social media, don't bother doing a joke about Watford managers or head coaches, because we've heard them all before, sort of kind of sticking up for ourselves a little bit. The last couple of times I haven't bothered, because what's the point? We can't really defend it anymore. Changing manager is a tactic. Yeah. It's not a sort of strategic change of direction or anything like that. It is when they want something to happen quickly, that's what he does. He changes the manager. It worked on the way up. It definitely hasn't worked on the way down. And I think they panicked is right, because they're looking at the league table and thinking, right, we actually only need probably one win will do it. As you said, John, Birmingham is now a massive game, really, really difficult one for Tom to go into. St Andrews will be absolutely bouncing. It'll be full. It's a massive game for them. They will fancy it. They'll be looking to win to get themselves out of a little bit of trouble. But they, I think, will have looked at that and think, right, if we're going to have a new manager bounce, it needs to be against a team that is potentially one we can get points about, because that's what they know. That's what he thinks works. Changing head coach. And what's interesting is I'm just surprised it didn't happen sooner, really. And I wonder whether it's linked to not having anyone lined up, not having wanting to pay anyone to come in. I'm sure the deal with Valerian Ismail was structured in a way that severance wouldn't be too expensive, knowing what they know about finance and their precarious situation and not wanting too many unplanned outlays. So you've got to work on the basis that that contract has been severed with minimal financial impact. But who can they get in at this stage for not much money, quite frankly? I don't know who's out there. I know Walter Mazzarri left Napoli, didn't he, recently? But
well, the big one was Colin Walnut leaving Aberdeen after winning. I mean, maybe Walnut, you know, the commuting up to Aberdeen was too much for him. But if that happened,
perhaps he's going to advise Tom.
It'd be brilliantly amazing.
And I wonder whether the fact that he's been announced as interim is, I'm not sure whether he's got all the requisite coaching badges or not. So maybe that's something that feeds into it.
Was going to the Premier League? You only need a certain one by the time you get to the Premier League. But remember, Cisco was doing the badges. So that's why he was allowed to coach in the Premier League, because he was finishing, he was in the middle of doing his badges. That was okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
We'll have to check that out, and I should have done my homework before mentioning it. But but as usual, there's lots of variables, but none of them are particularly. Look, I'm delighted for Tom. I hope he does well, and to see him progressing in the game is great. I wanted to touch on something just in terms of the timing of things, because Andrew French wrote an interesting piece in the Watford Observer about the January transfer window, and that looked like a sort of net loss, really. Net loss for us in terms of players. It definitely wasn't a net loss for other individuals, I'm sure. But it looked like a bit of a disaster. A sort of semi-fit Dennis was the only person that came in. Loser and Reece Healy went out. And Andrew in the Watford Observer wrote a piece sort of confirming that Valerian Ismail had gone to Gino with a specific list of players that he wanted, with specific attributes, and was told that we can't get those players for whatever reason, whether the deal couldn't be done, too much money, the player, whatever. They hit a brick wall, but offered him other players of the similar profile. So taking on board what he said, tried to get the players he wanted, couldn't get them, but offered him next best or as close as they could. And Andrew's piece was very clear, saying that he said no. He turned his nose up at anyone other than the exact players that he said he wanted. So that's an interesting development, quite an interesting nugget.
So that says to me he's putting his foot down because whatever the relationship is with the two of them, you know, that isn't a two-way street. That isn't maybe not respectable, but that isn't, almost like he's trying to goad him. You know, Gino is doing what I need because I'm the head coach, and if you're backing me, then you need to do this. And that's interesting. Like, you know, not if it is, here's my list of five, and they go, none of those five, rather than actually, well, we'll work on, well, let's, you know, some sort of, you know, two-way sort of discussion about who the player should be and which one of the priorities, and we'll try and get that player of yours. But, yeah, headspace, clearly their headspaces weren't in a line, and that's the thing you'd hoped. And the problem that we've had is, especially when it comes to transfers, two of the main directors and two main men running have gone this season. One has come back, and it did feel like, you know, what everyone was saying, our friend Modgy, you know, he was being talked about as in we're moving past him now by the people who were here previously, but then they'd gone by this January transfer window. So
evidently not the case, but I think that the fact of that is talking about Jason, and Jason was talking about the timing and whether Gino was hanging on. You know full well how Gino would have reacted to being told that I don't want these players that you and your team are suggesting. I've no doubt that despite him probably fitting the profile of the Emmanuel Dennis of a couple of years ago, fits the profile of what Ismail would have wanted. I'm sure there's no way he would have wanted Emmanuel Dennis in the football club. One win, by the way, since he arrived. We had a long conversation about the impact that Emmanuel Dennis potentially might have for stability for Ismail's future, and can't attribute it to Emmanuel Dennis entirely, but the form has gone off a cliff since he arrived, and the boss has disappeared. So perhaps we were right to raise a few concerns. But Gino will have had his nose put out of joint by Valerian Ismail. It's quite a ballsy move from Valerian Ismail to sort of say, no, I'm not going to have any more players. I'll muddle through with what I've got. If you think this is Emmanuel Dennis is what we need, then I'll show you what it's like with just him. But having done that, and then the performances since January being pretty relentlessly abject, it's not a difficult with that sort of extra little bit of knowledge. It's not a difficult stretch, is it, to imagine that Gino is just waiting to fire him? I think
someone must have talked him down. Because
potentially.
Who knows what happened against? You know, we know the news came out, and Talksport said the news that he was on the edge of losing his job. So somebody probably had to talk Gino down, because hang on, maybe not now, maybe not, you know, to make him not do that. Jace?
That run is what, 1 win in 10, are we saying?
Mm.
Now, there probably are other managers at better run football clubs that have been sacked this season for runs like that. So if you look at it in isolation, it kind of makes sense. But really, it just comes back to what Mike said at the very beginning. It's all about mm-hmm. the bigger picture. And how did we get here? How did we get to a state where we're only getting 1 win in 10 out of the group of players that we've got? So whilst we say, has he had to be talked down or talked one way or the other, in isolation, it's not surprising it's happening. Bigger picture, again, probably not surprising that it's happening.
I think the argument for him not doing it is pretty bleak. I think the argument coming to Gino would have been, what's the point? What is the point in sacking the manager when relegation at that stage, 2 or 2 weeks ago, was still looking unlikely? We can get through to summer. We can have a conversation then. What's the point in getting rid of another manager? I suspect that was the conversation that was had. And what a dreadful situation that really is in. It is to be in, isn't it? That the season has just sort of meandered to, well, from, it's been a roller coaster, hasn't it? It always is with Watford. But the fact it's sort of, we're meandering along just slightly out of control. The ship's a little bit rudderless, and we can see the rocks of relegation in the distance. We're just about managing to plot a course clear of them for now. But it's so frustrating and sad that it's ended up here. But I still kind of think, what is the point? Because unless Tom Cleverley is going to be the long-term answer, they're just looking for that bounce just to get 3-4 points or maybe another couple of draws to keep us in the division. And it's so short-term. It's so defeatist, really. And you could argue that not getting rid of someone who has gone on a run like that is defeatist. But I'd have much rather we could just, to be honest, just got through to the end of the season and dealt with it then. But yeah, I think the argument would have been, it doesn't really matter if you get rid of him. As long as we get another win from somewhere, the football's going to be naff. The final third issues can be solved to a certain degree. But when you've only got three strikers of varying quality, you can only do so much. So it's just, the whole thing is incredibly, incredibly dispiriting. Mm. And the thread coming through it all is that it comes from the top. It comes from Gino Pozzo. Is he going to change? No, he's not going to change because he just won't, because he would have done by now. If he was interested in changing the way he does things, he would have done it either after the cup final or the season we got relegated. Really changed things up and just looked to freshen things up. But actually what's happened is since then there's been a slow decline in an investment and apparent interest. He's not going to change. So until there is a change at the top, which is very, very difficult, I think we're just going to bobble along. And it's,
we are. And the thing is, we have to bobble along, go to foot matches. And that's, you know, the week by week stuff is the bit that's very important to lots of football fans.
Yeah, us included. Yeah. That's
so we've sort of, but with Valerian, you know, looking back on his achievements, let's say, and what he did add to this squad and this season, I suppose. Jason, for you, standout games, or is there something specifically you think he's he's added that we were severely lacking beforehand?
I think there was the discipline thing. I think it's probably an obvious one. I think that we've talked about sort of the fine structure, let's say, that they had in place for and the disciplinary structure, players that were meant to be in the starting 11 being dropped to the bench, subs being dropped from the squad completely if they went out of line on team rules. And a bit of fight and a likeable team as well at the start of the season. Before Christmas, we were enjoying watching this team play, even if results didn't always go our way. You're actually sort of coming away from games going, oh, well, but I'm still looking forward to going again next week because we're enjoying watching the team play. And you kind of saw what they were trying to do. And if you pick out, I think the game that stood out for me and that sort of defines that was the Norwich game, the last home win in the league, where we went 2-0 down, but we had the fight and the desire to come back and win that game 3-2, which we know would never have happened in the sort of previous three or four seasons. It just wasn't there. That was good. And it's just such a shame that we seem so far away from that now with the same group of players and the manager up until Saturday.
Yeah, the discipline was the biggest bit for me, I suppose. But I think more than anything, it's the fact that, yes, Loser was disciplined and he never was able to turn that around. But it does always feel like Valerian would be telling them off with his arm around them. In a way. And if you look at, again, I go back to what I said earlier about him, you know, Tom Delibashiru is that thing. It's, he hasn't just pushed him away and gone, I don't know, I'd like you, go away, and made someone feel like they're in, you know, inferior. He's actually gone, look, you're bad, tell him off, look, keep them there. And then when he's ready for him and when he needs him to fill in at right back or not necessarily play his preferred role, he's there ready to do it. So that balance he seemed to be finding, I think, that was it for me. Mike?
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really good example. We've been singing Tom Delibashiru's praises. Earlier on in the season, we were very much questioning him.
Yeah.
So I think that does show that what good man management can do. I mean, there's obviously been question marks since about who's been starting in various positions. We won't really know, but on the face of it, it looked like that discipline was something that had to be done. It was done, and the proof of the pudding was in the eating, wasn't it? We could see it happening. It looked like a team who is united and relatively strong. I think the best thing for me was the opening day was great. QPR, we were ahead in within a minute, which was one of the only times we've been ahead in a game, according to the stats that Matt shared recently. But QPR was a good, great, fun start to the season, and we thought, okay, we might be in for something a little bit different. And then it went wrong, didn't it? And there's those two games that I remember very, very clearly. I went up to Elland Road and saw us capitulate at Leeds. They beat us 3-0 at a time where they were actually struggling at home. They might not even have won at home, certainly for a decent spell. And Watford just folded in the face of just a fast-paced Leeds United, who were just aggressive and on the front foot, and Watford just melted. And then they followed it up with a game against Sunderland away, another big stadium, another storied football club, another one with a big reputation and a noisy crowd. That was under lights on a Tuesday, and again they looked haunted. They looked dead behind the, you know, much as they're looking like now. They looked beaten before really they'd started. They looked like they were waiting to lose. And I was watching that game thinking, oosh, we are in deep trouble. We look for all the world like relegation candidates, beaten before you start. And they turned it around. They went on a really decent run, picking up points away from home, some memorable wins away from home, Blackburn last minute, taking Preston apart. Close games. Preston was much closer than the goals, the score actually suggests. And what we enjoyed about that was it needed determination and strength and grit and standing shoulder to shoulder. And they did that for large periods. So post Sunderland, that run was largely really, really entertaining. If not entertaining, enjoyable, because you could see that they were digging in. They were playing for the badge that's on the shirt, which is something that we've been desperate for as Watford fans for so long. So I did enjoy that, which means that post Christmas and the new year, it's made it all the harder to take. you know, win away against QPR, win away against Rotherham, which was absolutely dismal. And the rest has been abject. I mean, look at the home form. It'll be a minimum of 122 days. If we beat Leeds, it'll be 122 days since our last home league win. It's an abomination, really. Nowhere near good enough. And the fact that it's gone from a team that we can be really sort of proud of and enthused by, even if they're not the finished article, even if they're short on quality, and even if we knew that they weren't really going to be competitive at the top end of the division, at least they felt like a team we could get behind. And that they've just had it sucked out of them, and they look haunted again. They just sort of, I don't fault them for effort. I don't think it's their fault. They are just so low on confidence, and to see them, you know, just shells of what they were earlier in the season again it's just been so disappointing. And I think that juxtaposition, it's so incongruous the way they look now compared to the way they looked then. That's why I don't think anyone is surprised by the, you know, regardless of Gino Pozzo's history, I don't think anyone's surprised. If you've watched Watford games in the past since January, since the turn of the year, you'd be going, yeah, well, as Dean Austin said.
I was about to say.
he's on borrowed time. Messages,
yeah. That's where we are. And they're the things that we're worried about. But in terms of this last 9 games of the season, Jason, what is it, do you think, that if you were a player, what is it you think if you're in training tomorrow and in comes Tom Cleverley, who has been around the ground, he's been coaching the young'uns for this year and been around the place for a long, long time. What is a player, do you think, like him, sorry, coach, former player like him, going to be able to do? And almost, what do you think he needs to do in the next week, and then in the, you know, for the final game? Is he going to be fun Tom, or is he going to be hard to beat Tom, tough player Tom? What do you reckon?
You get the impression that we've tried to be hard to beat so far this season, just with the sort of the lack of commitment going forward at times in recent games, where we've lost confidence, and Mike's talked about us going into our shell. We kind of sort of sit back, and perhaps the team needs to be let off the leash a bit more. Mm. Whether Tom will do that or not, I don't know. I think there's a big question there, isn't there? He's got no coaching experience or managing experience at that level. He's been looking after the under-18s. Doing reasonably well. He's got that cup final that he got the guys to, didn't he? I think there's a worry. I think my biggest concern is that, are we lacking leaders? Mm. Are the young players in the team not delivering because their confidence is suffering? If you look at the sort of the winning goal for Cov on Saturday, there were big holes in that defence because runners had come through. I think Hoot had been pulled wide. Porteous was left sort of one-on-one in the middle of the pitch on the 18-yard line. There's no one else around. Basically a one-on-one exercise. And I don't think there's much Porto could do, and the ball ends up in the back of the net. Where were the midfield doing their jobs? I think people called out Kone for that. I think he got shouted at by Porto afterwards. And it's those sort of players that we know have got promise, players that we've seen flashes of. Now, is the fact that Cleves has done, in people's eyes, a good enough job with the youngsters, is he now the man to sort the youngsters in the first team squad out? I think it's a different, well, I'd say it's a different ball game. It's not a different ball game. It's still football, isn't it? But it's a different level, isn't it? It's a step up for Cleverley, as well as any players that sort of make that step up to the first team squad. And I'm just worried that, can he do what he needs to do with the youngsters whilst managing the team as a whole? I wonder if they'll look at the senior group in the first team squad and get them working closely with him. Will the likes of Livermore, maybe an Ince, with all that experience, will he be bringing them into sort of the coaching team, or just helping him out sort of with the management of that first team squad to sort of keep them on side? Because I think it does worry me a little bit. I think it's a big ask for him, but yeah, hey, let's see what happens.
Mike, do you reckon he's phoned Sir Alex Ferguson already?
I reckon
I'm
probably.
Well, boss, I'm now managing as well.
Is that the Tom Cleverly impression we're going to get for the rest of the season?
Be youthful.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was going to mention Tom Cleverly has pedigree in the game, doesn't he? He's been in some pretty major dressing rooms, both internationally and domestically. He'll have seen how things work. He's obviously got a desire to coach. Otherwise, there's no way a player with his sort of past is going to hang around at Watford with all the issues that we know are prevalent. So it's obviously something that burns within him to go on and do. Everyone's got to have their first job. He must have also known that there's a chance this is coming, I suspect. Much like we've been talking about, we've been watching it for the past 2 or 3 weeks, like a slow train wreck, really. Those guys aren't stupid. They'll have been talking about who might be the next cab off the rank and what might be the, you know, he might have, well, for all we know, have been teed up a couple of weeks ago because his name was on people's lips, wasn't it, after the Huddersfield game. So it wasn't a surprise when Tom Cleverly was announced. So how much he's been able to get ready, we'll never know. Of course, the first game is a massive one, as we said, away at Birmingham. Big old test. Wesley Hurt, who we've mentioned as one of the senior players, played every minute of league football so far this season, is out because he's suspended. So that's another challenge he's got to face. So you'd hope that his stature means that he would get respect. You'd think that players like that are liked and respected just because of that they're players who have always done their talking on the pitch. They let their medals do the talking. They let the record do the talking. They're not flashy. I mean, he needs a blooming haircut, doesn't he? From what I can gather. So he's obviously focused on the task at hand. I mean,
he's not on telly as much these days, is he? So he doesn't have to keep that up. And
that's how you judge a good manager, isn't it? By whether I think they need a haircut or not. That's obviously.
If he turns up though at that first press conference and he's had a haircut, that would be brilliant.
Thanks for listening, Tom. So Jason has alluded to it. It is a gamble. It is a gamble. But I think the fact that he's been around the club, he knows the players. And hopefully knows what buttons to press and who to help them out. I think you're right. I think that Val named a senior leadership group, didn't he? And I think Tom Cleverly will be leaning heavily on those. Of course, there is. It did the announcement from Watford did say his backroom staff was going to be announced in due course. So I wonder whether
Craig Cathcart.
Well,
who is it? Who could it be?
Well, I just wonder whether someone like Paul Robinson, who who's got a bit of Watford pedigree, something to get the fans sort of doubly on side, if you like. Because I think from a supporter's point of view, you'll struggle to find anyone that wouldn't wish Tom Cleverly well. So he starts off with credit in the bank for sure. Paul Robinson, what's his coaching record like? I don't know. I haven't watched closely enough to know the impact he's had on the teams. But what we do know is that he loves Watford. Watford fans love him. So perhaps as an extra sort of... Because the place needs a lift. The place needs a lift. We all need something. You know, I've been very, very, very... Just flat. Not sort of depths of despair, but just flat. And the ground, I thought... Absolute credit to the Vicarage Road crowd on Wednesday night against Swansea, because when we got our equaliser, that was off the back of the crowd really getting going. And there wasn't really much to cheer about. It was a sparse crowd as we saw, but the crowd recognised they needed lifting and got stuck in and got Watford sort of to rouse them a little bit. But overall, you know, when you're walking up Yellow Brick Road / Occupation Road yesterday, there's not really much anger. There's not really much sort of recriminations or shouting. It's just sort of glum acceptance, which cannot be allowed to go on for too long. And that part could be something to do with the reason that the decision was made at this stage as well. Because again, it looked like a sparse crowd at Vicarage Road on Saturday. I think we all know that the announced attendance is slightly different from the actual attendance for a number of reasons. People can't make it. People choose not to. Season ticket holders, but you bought a ticket, but you don't come. But that's quite telling. If you're Gino sat over the other side in the top tier of the Graham Taylor stand, and you look to your right, you look to the left, you look dead ahead, and you're seeing big pockets of empty seats. I read Matt Rowson's piece, and it's quite a big thing for you not to go and watch your team.
Mm.
That's a big step, because how many times have you talked about protests? Very, very rarely has a club managed to, or a group managed to get people to walk out or to not turn up at all. It's a very, very big step to not go and see your team. And the fact that people are choosing to take that step with Watford in the way it is A, not surprising in the slightest. I woke up for the first time on Saturday in a very, 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 very long time and thought, I could do without this, to be perfectly honest. Usually, I think the thought of Zed cars and it, just seeing everyone, and I'm there. I bolt out of my bed, loving it. Can't wait, whether we're bottom of the league, top of the league, Division 4, Division 1, whatever. I love it. But on Saturday, I was like, you know, I could do something better. Chesham are away. Obviously, they lost, so I'm glad I didn't travel down to down there to see him. But that kind of says where we're at. And so to my original point, the place needs a lift. And it's kind of a bit desperate, because we need a lift and we need some points. And then if the team are going to do well, we're going to have to play our part. And if we're going to play our part, the team have got to get us going. So we need something to believe in again. Because I think, like I said, at the top, at the highest level, I think we're in trouble. I think the direction this football club is going in is problematic in the extreme. I've got huge, huge concerns about the medium and long-term future of Watford. But that is going to kind of have to wait. It's always bubbling underneath, but now it's going to have to wait, because we're in such a slump, such a malaise, such a miserable state, and we still need points to make sure that we're not playing League One football next year. It's unlikely. Teams underneath have got to play each other. But also, even if we are safe, we just want to go into summer sort of feeling like we've had something to get excited about and cheer again. So something had to happen. Something has happened. It's over to Tom Cleverley, whoever joins him on the dugout and in his coaching staff, to get him going. And it's down to those players who have somehow got to find some fortitude and moral fibre and snap out of that malaise, that funk, that low confidence that is just permeating everywhere at the moment. Things have got to change in the short term, but things have also got to change in the long term at the top. Because if that doesn't change, if we don't get that change at the top, there really is very, very little point about worrying who's in charge or who starts at right back in our next match. Lots and lots to go at.
Plenty. But actually, there's one thing coming up very soon, which might make you laugh. I don't know. The WD18, our friends who do that thing on their YouTube, because they're younger than us. They have got a special competition game, tournament. That's what I want, tournament. On the 23rd, Saturday 23rd of March, it's International Weekend, at West Harts Sports Club, you know, where former home of Watford Football Club. It's all day's event, seven-a-side tournament, basically. And yes, there is a From the Rookery End team. Have we sorted that out properly yet, Mike? Or do I need to go in goal?
We'll see. I'll tell you this. I am not going in goal. we've got a decent team shaping up. It's we've scoured the Ben Manger's been out of work basically, so I've used him to sort of come up with a seven-a-side team for the WD18 Cup. Real credit to those guys. Mm. Their work. The things like this. And it kind of goes back to, we haven't mentioned stuff about, there's lots to be proud of about Watford Football Club. There is, you know, it was the Her Game 2 match day on Saturday, which, as you'd expect, the club was fully behind. Tremendous. Lots of great initiatives. We know that. I think it is worth saying. But yeah, fair play to our fellow supporters who get off their backside and actually do something. And WD18 are doing that in the shape of this fundraising tournament. It takes a lot of effort. It takes hours. It takes effort. So fair play to them. We were looking forward to entering a team of varying sizes and quality into that. We'll be interesting to see how we get on. Hopefully there isn't too much footage ending up on, online of us in action.
I'm a bit worried. I'm going to end up being the oldest player on the pitch. is that. I feel that there's that risk there. But hey,
we might get a goal head start.
I might have to go and go.
Yeah. So it's on the 23rd, Saturday 23rd, then during international break. You can come down. You can get involved. There's plenty of stuff going on. There's a raffle and auction if you go online right now. WD18cup.charityhive.co.uk. They've got some shirts, some very special shirts. You can put some bids on and some hospitality stuff. You can buy tickets via the online raffle tickets. But at the actual event, there's going to be a raffle. There's going to be food. There's going to be soft drinks, family activities. It's going to be a little bit of a fun day out. So do make your way down there if you can. They're not going to stream on their YouTube channel, are they? I had a nightmare little feeling about that.
No chance.
Hopefully not. Please not.
We won't allow it.
I have a chat to Charlie there, and I might put on some tunes to keep everyone entertained for a little bit. But that's do get down. And if you can't get down, do go to that website. See some of the things you can bid on. WD18cup.charityhive.co.uk. That's all to come in a few weeks' time. But we still have a game against Birmingham City at St Andrews next week. And, of course, we'll have a discussion about that afterwards. We find ourselves, as we know, with a new head coach, one we know quite well, because we started this podcast, Mike, when he was a loanee. We saw him leave. We saw him become a player, a captain, a coach, and now a head coach. So it's sort of a lovely sort of circular thing a little bit, I suppose. So we'll see how Thomas, I think we have to call him Thomas now, don't we? Not Tom.
Mr. Cleverly for me.
Mr. Cleverly,
yeah. Yeah. Sir Cleverly. Sir Tom. And see who does. Sir Nigel, could Sir Nigel come back? That'd be quite good.
Never say never.
Never say never.
Decent gig at Spurs.
That is true. That is probably true. Nicer training ground as well. Might do.
Before we go, John.
Yeah.
Can I just we mentioned there the sort of WD18 guys and how those supporters are doing something incredibly worthwhile. Not everyone that listens to this podcast is online. Not everyone is involved in social media. And I think that the vast majority of Watford supporters probably aren't. The vast majority of Watford supporters go to the game with their mates, with their families, with their loved ones, have a beer, have a pie, come home. But for those of us that are online, I think the last week or so has been pretty pretty tumultuous. Let's put it that way. And I think one thing that I know for a fact is that the majority of us, all of us really, want the best for Watford Football Club. We're all in it for the same reasons. We all want our club to be successful and solid and there for us. That's what we want. And I think over the past sort of week or so, we've seen some, I don't know, it's just felt a little bit fractious out there. And ultimately, it's a plea to look. Being a football supporter is about passion. We're all passionate. That's why we give up our time. Other people do things in different ways. It's a passionate, emotive experience supporting your football club. But be nice, ultimately. Be nice, because we all want the same thing. You don't need to cut someone else down at the knee to get your point across. And if you do that, you're probably not making it right. So just be nice. You can be passionate. You can be strong-willed. You can have views that are diametrically opposed to mine without having to be unpleasant. And that's not aimed at any particular individual. It's the whole discourse. Is there's no need for it to degenerate into point scoring and insults. You can be passionate and you can also be level-headed and, look, I'm going to say it again, be nice. There's nothing wrong with it. Just don't be a dick.
I thought you were going to go there, the Parkin family motto. Thank you very much, Michael, for your time.
Cheers, guys. Good luck, Tom, Mr. Cleverly.
And thank you, Jason.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back with more from the Rookerins. Actually, later on this week, I've done an interview with the guys from Watford Treasury, and their new book about the 1970s is out. You can get it from the Hornet Shop and online at watfordtreasury.co.uk. But we'll put links and stuff. We'll put some stuff on our socials and stuff where you can find that. But it's a lovely little book, so do have a look for that as well. But more about that book in a podcast we'll bring out on Thursday. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you for just trying to be as nice a Watford fan as you can be, and for, just putting up with it all. Come on, you horns!